name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 194. I'm recording it on Saturday, December 18th, 2009. The P10 level today is 20. That's not good for people buying stocks. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Cambodian Odyssey. The title of the podcast is The Future of Buy and Hold is a Political Question. This is one that I've had in mind for some time, and I think I'm ready to go forward now. I'm expecting the year 2010 to be the year we take the great safe withdrawal rate debate outside of Investo world, outside of the personal finance world, and into the political blogosphere. That's one of my projects for the coming year. And the last podcast I did, number 193, my vision, I talked about some of the things I'm hoping or expecting to see in coming years as a result of the work we've done in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities over the past 8 years. And, you know, obviously in order to make all these things happen, some of these, you know, very modest goals, like just being able to post honestly on safe withdrawal rates, and some very grandiose goals to change the history of investing in a very positive way from the work we've done, because of the work we've done together over the first 8 years. One of the things we're going to have to do is build a community of people trying to open the internet up to honest posting. And the very fact that I need to say those words tells the story. How bizarre it is to have to talk about a goal of opening the internet up to honest posting on investing. How could the internet ever be closed to honest investing? Honest posting on investing questions. But that is indeed where we stand today. I won't go into great depth on that, but I'll go through it a little bit because some of the people listening to this podcast will be, when I go to these blogs, these political blogs, I will be, you know, in some cases noting this podcast and suggesting they come here for an overview of what's going on. And so I do want to discuss that a little bit, but without going into great depth because the podcast would never end. But obviously we have lots and lots of materials at the website dealing both with the substantive question showing why the buy and hold model can never work. Not only has never worked, but can never work. It's logically impossible that it could ever work for the long-term investor. And also the procedural questions, which are the more political questions. Why this cannot be discussed today on the internet. Why there is today a ban on honest posting in place on internet discussion boards. And also in the personal finance blogosphere. So, well, I'm kicking off the new year with a discussion of these political questions, and the whole question of buy and hold is not really an investing question. We think of it as an investing question because buy and hold was developed by people who, you know, academics who study investing, and then it was promoted by the stock selling industry. And we think of it, you know, we see it written up in Money Magazine, the Wall Street Journal. We think, oh, it's a political question. I mean, I'm sorry, it's a investing question, a personal finance question, but it's not. Because what has happened, there is no intellectual debate today. There was once upon a time. There were people who genuinely believed in buy and hold, and there was support for their position. But today that's not true. The intellectual case does not exist. That doesn't mean there aren't people who believe in it. There are millions of smart and good people who believe in buy and hold. Please understand. But there is no intellectual debate. So let me just start by saying, I should probably start by saying why buy and hold can never work. It's the most basic thing you could imagine. So if there are listeners here from personal finance blogs, please don't be intimidated. Please don't think that because I'm going to be talking about investing questions and maybe you don't think of yourself as an investing expert, that this is going to be over your head. It's not. It's very, 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 very simple. You've been led to believe that investing is more complicated is by all sorts of rigmarole that's unnecessary. But the basic questions you need to know to be an effective investor are very, very simple. The way buying stocks work is the same way buying anything else that can be bought for money works. Stocks, the thing you're buying is an income stream. If you buy an index fund, say you buy a share of the S&P index or a, you know, total U.S. stock index fund, what you're buying is an income stream. And it's a great deal. Stocks offer a great deal. The income stream generated by the companies that make up that index, all the companies in the U.S. economy, have in the past, for a long, long time, going back to 1870, have always generated enough productivity, enough profits, to support an annual return of 6.5 real, which is a great return on your investment. 6.5 real might translate with inflation to something around 10%. So that's what you're buying. You're putting down your money. You're giving up use of your money for X amount of time, however long you hold the index fund share. And in return, you're getting an income stream of 6.5 real. Great deal. You know, it's a great way to fund your retirement. Now, there's one little kink that makes it should only make it a little bit complicated, but because of the way we deal with stocks, it's turned into an immense mountain of confusion. But the one little kink is, depending on how much you pay for that income stream, it may give you 6.5, or it may give you a whole lot more than 6.5, or it may give you a whole lot less than 6.5. Now, isn't that true of every single thing you buy? In other words, if you buy a big screen television, you know, for $2,000, you're expecting to get X number of fun units out of it, and you're giving up $2,000. And you evaluate the value proposition. You say, okay, is it worth it or is it not? Now, you might say, well, it's a good buy. The price is $2,000, it's a good buy. Now, say that the price tripled. Say the price was $6,000. Would it still be a good buy? Probably not. Say that the price fell in half. The price is only say you weren't sure it was a good buy at $2,000, and then the price falls in half, and it's only $1,000. Then you'd say, yeah, now it's definitely a good buy. Well, the same thing. It works the same way with stocks. You get 6.5 if you buy the stocks at fair value. Fair value is a PE10. That's our valuation metric. That's the price of the index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. If the PE10 value is 14, that's fair value, you're going to get a return of 6.5 real, or something in that neighborhood. Might not be exactly that, but something in that neighborhood. Well, what happens if the PE10 value is only half of that, like it was in 1982? Well, then you're going to get this amazing deal. You're not going to get 6.5, you're going to get double that. You're going to get an amazing value proposition. And what if it's three times? What if you don't pay fair value for those stocks, you pay three times fair value, like people were doing in January of 2000 when prices were insane? Well, then the value proposition is very poor. So we have a calculator, the stock return predictor, where we run a regression analysis of the historical data going back to 1870 to determine what sort of return can you expect at different prices. And at the prices that applied in 1982, you could reasonably expect the most likely value 10-year return annualized was 15% real per year. So obviously an amazing return. At the top of the bubble, the most likely 10-year return was a negative 1% a year. So everybody who invested in stocks at the top of the bubble was basically burning up their retirement money. They were destroying their chances of financing a good retirement. Now, that's the substance. Obviously, buy and hold cannot work in such an environment. With buy and hold, you choose a stock allocation and you stay at that stock allocation no matter what. Well, if there's a time when stocks are paying 15% real per year, obviously you want to go with a high stock allocation, let's say 70%. But then at a later time, when stocks are paying a negative 1%, you obviously don't want to be going with a 70% stock allocation. You want to be moving your money to something better, something with a higher return, money markets or certificates of deposit or I-bonds or TIPS or corporate bonds or all sorts of things. You surely don't want to be going with stocks when they're paying a negative long-term return. So buy and hold can never work. It can work, of course, for short periods of time. But it can't work long-term. Can't work for the long-term investor. Now, that's the substance. That's the problem. Now, that sounds very simple. But that's, again, that's the economic issue. That's the investing issue. That's not the political issue. There were people who believed in buy and hold. Buy and hold came from academic research. Eugene Fama is the name associated with this. Research done in the 1960s that said that the market is quote unquote efficient. And what that means is that the market is rational, that the market sets prices properly. So this whole idea that you should stick with one stock allocation, the root idea is the market always gets the price right, and so you should just be going with the market. You shouldn't be trying to outthink the market. Well, as I say, Eugene Fama really did believe that, and all these other researchers believed it. And then what happened is John Bogle, the founder of the Vanguard Fund family, he decided to take this academic research and carry it over to the stock selling industry, create a new model for selling stocks. And so that's how he set up all these index funds and became very popular. That was a great idea. It was a wonderful thing to make stock advice more scientific. Instead of just people giving their opinions, they were making stock advice more scientific, more objective, which was a very good thing. It's the foundation for the rational investing model, which is the model I explore at the website, passionsaving.com. But something went wrong. When Bogle moved all this academic research over and adopted this idea as what became the conventional investing wisdom of the last three decades, they thought this efficient market theory was true. They believed in it. Well, in science, what happens is we learn as time goes on. So things we sometimes think are true end up not being true. And that's what happened. And Yale professor Robert Shiller published research in 1981 showing that valuations affect long-term returns. Well, valuations affect long-term returns. The market obviously cannot be efficient, cannot be setting the price properly, because if the market sets the price properly, the whole idea of overvaluation is an absurdity. You can't set the price properly and also have overvaluation. The two things are in conflict. Shiller showed that the PE10 value that applies on any given day predicts the future return, the long-term return. Well, the PE10 value is meaningless if there's no such thing as overvaluation. So there's no way a meaningless number could predict future returns. So Shiller, by all logic, showed that buy and hold is complete gibberish. Complete 100% gibberish, the most dangerous investing idea ever developed by mortal man. Okay? So buy and hold is a total complete disaster. It's not only me that says this. Many people say this. Not the majority. I'd say it's 10% of all experts say this. The people like Robert Shiller, Cliff S. Ness, Rob Arnott, Jeremy Grantham, Ed Easterling, John Walter Russell, John Molden, you know, on and on and on. Many people say this. Many people, of course, and of course, I'm sure that all the people who advocate buy and hold are at least familiar with the research. They don't say that buy and hold doesn't work, but they do acknowledge that valuations affect long-term returns. What they won't do is acknowledge the implications of that. In other words, if you ask them, do valuations affect long-term returns, they will say yes. If you say, well, then doesn't that mean buy and hold can't work? They'll say, I've got an appointment. I've got to run. I'm very, very busy. Very, very busy, man. Send me an email. I'll see if I can get to that. And then when you send the email, there'll be some advertisement for their book or something. It'll come back. They can't answer the question because there is no answer to the question. We quote-unquote knew that buy and hold doesn't work in 1981, but we can't accept it. I don't believe these people have bad intent. What I believe is that they are suffering from cognitive dissonance. They believed in buy and hold with their hearts, minds, and souls. And by a strange historical coincidence, the year when buy and hold was discredited, 1981, was the beginning of the biggest bull market in history. And so they sort of, you know, that when they first saw the research, I think they sort of tuned it out. They said, well, you know, that's one piece of research and, you know, that doesn't prove anything and we'll have to see, you know, what other people come up with. And so they sort of rationalized it. And then stocks started going up. and all of their customers loved them, and they built an entire industry around this. This whole industry of personal financial advice, it wasn't anywhere near the same size as it has become back in the early 1980s. This whole industry was built up. Money Magazine, I think, only first started publishing, I think it was late 70s. So that entire magazine, you know, you go to, everybody knows Money Magazine, but it didn't exist before this. Buy and hold put all these things on the map. And so it built up this institutional support. And as the bull market continued, the desire to question buy and hold grew less and less, as the mountain of evidence that shows buy and hold can never work grew larger and larger. So we were heading for a crisis. The evidence for buy and hold became less and less and less. The evidence that it can never work grew higher and higher. And yet the popular support for buy and hold at the same time grew higher and higher, leading to this to the insane prices. What happened in the late 1990s is we went to price levels never before seen in U.S. history. Every time we have gone to a P10 level above 25, we've done it four times in history. Every single time we've seen a massive price crash, not one exception in the record. And we've never had a massive price crash except for those four times, at least not any that have lasted for a substantial amount of time. And every one of those four times, we've had an economic crisis. It's not only stock investors who suffer when buy and hold is promoted. It's the entire economy that is destroyed. This is how bad it is, because there's such a huge misallocation of resources. When you tell people that the price you pay for stocks doesn't matter, they put so much money into stocks because it becomes this huge Ponzi scheme, this huge get-rich-quick scheme. And everyone wants to participate. And the experts are telling them, hey, it works. And they're not warning you. They're telling you it's a good idea. They're telling you better do it. And so we always suffer a massive economic crisis and a massive stock crash. The worst we ever saw, of course, was the one that led to the Great Depression in the 1920s. But the PE10 level, as I said, 25, 26 is where prices become totally insane. Before the Great Depression, we went to 33. So we went beyond insane. We went to insane, doubled, tripled. In the late 1990s, we went to 44. So we're way, way, way beyond what caused the Great Depression this time. But you can't tell it, you can't say this publicly. Because, I mean, there are people who say it. As I say, this 10%, they say it. But what they do is there's a social taboo against saying it where people who don't already know it will find out about it. So it is reported, say, on bear boards, you know, people who short stocks and all this sort of thing. But if you try to say it at any of the boards where, you know, average people go, Motley Fool, Morningstar.com, Bogleheads.org, Early Retirement Forum, IndexUniverse.com, it's banned at all these places. I've tried. I've gone to all these places, reported the realities, and never once put forward an abusive post. Always posting with total politeness and total warmth. And all I've done is report historical data. I'll say, you know, this is what the data shows. And I've always had many supporters. I've always had people saying, this is wonderful. This is the first person that's ever made sense of stock investing. Thanks so much for helping out. But then there's always a group. And it's usually a group where it's somebody who developed a calculator under the buy and hold model, or they wrote a book promoting buy and hold, or they're an investing advisor that promotes buy and hold, and they go ballistic and they go nuclear and they engage in the most extreme abusive posting you've ever seen. Rob, we're going to kill your wife and children. If people post in support, we're going to kill your wife and children. They go to, you know, they'll find editors who have run articles by me, they'll call up their bosses and, you know, report false facts about my financial circumstances, saying you shouldn't run an article quoting this guy. You know, they put up entire websites ridiculing me, ridiculing my supporters, ridiculing blogs that permit me to put guest blog entries up. They've had threads saying I stalk women, threads saying my parents are alcoholics, threads ridiculing my wife because we lost a child, you know, making fun of her circumstances. And if ever there have been people that supported me, the same thing. They'll start websites to destroy them. They follow them everywhere on the internet. They enter their names into Google search engines so they know where these people are every day and if they posted a blog. So the point here is there is not honest posting on investing today on the internet. It's not. It's just a fact. And I've, of course, you know, the fact that there are these strange outlier personalities that engage in this behavior, that's not so extraordinary. You know, as all of the boards at which I've posted and the blogs at which I've posted have had rules protecting us from this sort of thing. The problem here is that when you report it, the site owners side with the people doing the abusive posting, the buy and holders. And this has happened so many times I can't count anymore. All those places I mentioned, Honest Posting has been blogged, has been banned. I don't think one of those places ever banned the abusive posters. I don't recall a single case of that happening. It's happened at blogs. It's Oblivious Investor blog run by Mike Piper has banned Honest Posting. What's it called? Behavior Gap blog run by Carl Richards has banned Honest Posting. Get Rich Slowly blog is run by J.D. Roth. That's probably the biggest personal finance blog. He has not banned it, but he's come real close. He had two threads where he banned Honest Posting. He said, I won't allow any more Honest Posting on this thread, but he has not banned it as a rule. I have posted honestly there, and J.D. still permits me to post. But I have sent in guest blog entries, and he will not run them, and he will not respond. He will not say why he won't run them. Many other blogs, there have been some blogs that have been stand-up blogs. What's the guy? Phil at the Weeconomist. He's been a stand-up guy. And Digitari Life. I forget the woman's name there. I don't think she gives her name. But she's been stand-up. There have been some others. But as a general rule, they will attack. And the blog owners and the site owners will either side with the buy and hold dogmatics, or if they don't side, they will allow the most abusive stuff imaginable, which of course intimidates all of the ordinary readers, the people who want to learn. So they're afraid to learn. The recent ban was at Four Pillars, Quest for Four Pillars blog. A guy named Mike owns it. And Mike had allowed Honest Posting there for some time, but he had me do a guest. He allowed me to put up a guest blog entry, and we had lots of positive response. People come in. I had said I described buy and hold as a get rich quick scheme, and a guy came on and said, "It's the first time I've ever described it as a get rich quick scheme." And he said, "This is great. I've always had doubts about buy and hold, you know." And Mike got upset, and Mike banned Honest Posting the next day and deleted the entire thread so that people can't read this. People can't find out. Honest Posting was even banned at the Money Blog Network, which is a place where bloggers meet to discuss strategies for building up their personal finance blogs. And there were two threads there on which we discussed the realities of stock investing. Both of them were taken down. I was sent emails where they threatened to ban me. I just said, I'm going to continue to post honestly. They did not ban me, so I'm not, you know, I can't really say Honest Posting is banned there, but it's come within an inch. A clear message was sent to all the people who go there that if you post honestly on the flaws in the buy and hold model, you know, we're not going to like you. We're going to smear you. And in the blogging community, this is a big deal because the way you build up a blog is by getting links from your fellow bloggers. It's all a little community. So once you become known as the person who has, quote unquote, crossed the buy and hold dogmatics, you've got a problem in building up your own blog. One of the things they've told me is they said, Rob, why don't you just post only at your own blog? Because we're all, you know, we're promoting products, we're trying to make money, and we, you know, they don't say this, but I think essentially it's fair to say the deal is they need to promote a get-rich-quick scheme to get people in. And, you know, why don't you just post at your own blog? Well, if you post at your own blog, nobody's going to know it's there. You need to post at other blogs to get people to learn what you have at your blog. And that means the other blogs need to tolerate honest posting on the subject. But if you're trying to promote a get-rich-quick scheme and somebody comes on and points out that it is a get-rich-quick scheme and that we've known this for 30 years, that looks bad. Looks bad for the blogger. That looks bad for the investing expert, you know, who has endorsed this stuff. At Vanguard Diehards board at Morningstar.com, Honest Posting was banned. And we had hundreds of posters there express a desire that Honest Posting be permitted. I have I have an article at the website. Go to the Banned at Motley Fool section. And it's my favorite article at the website. There's an article there called Honest Posting on Valuations Banned and Internet Discussion Boards. Has 101 comments. Snippets, not full comments, but snippets of comments that were filed by people who want to hear the reality, want to learn the realities of stock investing. And they were asking that all these smear campaigns be dropped. And a lot of those were from Vanguard diehards. And at Vanguard diehards, there are big name people participating in that community. Bill Bernstein, he's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal. Larry Swedrow, big financial planner. Rick Furry. John Bogle himself doesn't post regularly, but he does attend the annual meetings. And he has said that he looks at that board once a week. And the most vicious smear campaign I think I've ever seen on the internet was conducted at that board to block Honest Posting because so many people wanted to hear it, they had to have a very vicious campaign. And John Bogle said not a word. I've written him emails. Say, John, can you help us out? No response. No response. So this is a problem. I've been at this for 7.5 years. The first post was put to Motley Fool on May 13th, 2002. And the first post pointed out that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, these are the studies that financial planners use to help us plan our retirements, get all the numbers wrong because they don't include a valuation adjustment. And this has been confirmed by numerous experts in the time since. William Bernstein, I just mentioned, he said that anyone using one of those studies to plan a retirement would be well advised to, quote, forget about it. Larry Swedrow, who I mentioned, he said that these studies are garbage in, garbage out research. Ed Easterling, the author of the book Unexpected Returns, he said that the people who follow these studies are going to end up spending their declining years, you know, working at greeters at Walmart because all the numbers are so off. Scott Burns, Dallas Morning News columnist, Scott Burns, I wrote to him, this is years ago, and I said, Scott, can you help us out, write about this? He said, oh, I agree with you, Rob. I agree valuations affect long-term returns. Then he wrote a column and he buried the story. And he did mention that the studies get the numbers wrong, but he didn't personally endorse it. He said, some say, there's a new school that says this. But he didn't say he believes it, which I think is his job, to tell people, is this new school right or wrong? And then I got into an email discussion with Scott about why he's not doing more to warn people. It would seem to me, if the studies we use to plan our retirements get the numbers wildly wrong, we should be trying to warn people. There could be millions of people suffering failed retirements because of this. And Scott's answer to me, well, there are two things. One, he wrote in the column, he said, the reason you haven't read about this in the media, even though it's been discovered for years now, is, quote, it is information most people don't want to hear. In other words, it is not popular to tell people the realities of stock investing. We encourage people to put all their retirement or a lot of their retirement money in stocks at times when the long-term value proposition was so poor that they were going to basically be destroying their retirement plans. And if we tell them now, after they've lost so much money, then they don't want to hear that. Well, that's true. It's a true statement. But how are you going to ever solve the problem if you don't admit that you got it wrong? Are you going to continue to promote buy and hold after it's destroyed all these lives? It is information most people don't want to hear. The job of a financial columnist is not to tell people what they want to hear. It's to tell them what they need to hear. No? But in another conversation with Scott, I got into an email discussion with him, and he said, Rob, well, I posted something at his discussion board. An honest report on the safe withdrawal rate, which he himself endorsed in his column. And he banned me. And I said, Scott, you know, what's the story? And he says, oh, Rob, he says, you know, this is catastrophically unproductive to tell people the accurate safe withdrawal rate number. That's catastrophically unproductive. Why is it catastrophically unproductive? I would think it would be catastrophically productive to give people accurate numbers. It's catastrophically unproductive because the stock selling industry made hundreds of millions of dollars promoting buy and hold, and it is complete and total gibberish. And the academic research has been showing this for 30 years. That's why it is catastrophically unproductive. So says Rob Bennett. But I've been living it. I think I know. For 8 years now. Close to 8 years. That's where we stand. So the question here in, I'm recording this late December, and it'll be getting posted to the site early January 2010. The question before us is, does it serve any purpose to continue to try to get these ideas discussed in, at investing sites and investing blogs? I really question whether it serves much purpose any longer. There are organized groups. John Graney was the author of one of the studies that got the numbers wrong, and he has organizes a group every day. They meet at his website, to go around to the different blogs and to post abusively. And he's got an honest discussion banned at numerous places. And all the big boards have already banned it. I just last week I was banned a second time at Morningstar, and the reason they gave is they said, Rob, your post is inflammatory, and you can look at my blog and read the text of the post. I'm not going to repeat it here. But the post was one paragraph where I quote it from a book. The book is called The Wisdom of Crowds. Popular book, accepted book. I quote it. The post wasn't even in my name, my words, quoting an expert in the field. And this was inflammatory. But the post that came after it said, Rob Bennett is the scourge of the internet. He does this, he does that. And that wasn't inflammatory at all. That was fine. That was left up. And it was put up by a poster who actively participates at the Graney Board and has been doing so for years. Actively participates in smear campaigns against anyone who posts honestly on safe withdrawal rates or related matters. And has a reputation going back years. And he posts under the same name, Drip Guy. He posts at the Graney Board under that name. He posts at Morningstar under that name. Morningstar says, fine, no problem. When I was at Morningstar, I used to post there daily. And it was a very popular poster. And we would get these threads where these vicious attacks. And somebody said, well, we used to have a reputation for not having this. What happened? Where are all these people coming from? And I put up a post. I said, they're coming from the Graney Board. Graney's out there recruiting people. And Mel Lindauer, the co-author of the book, The Bogleheads Guide to Investing, encourages Graney. He puts up posts saying, Graney's doing great. Graney's wonderful. And he links to the site where they're organizing the smear campaigns. And I talked to Morningstar about it, and I told them, and I said, do you want me to report on what Lindauer does? No response. They don't want to know. Lindauer stands up on a stage and shakes John Bogle's hand at these annual meetings. It's all incredible, but it's all true. And so the story is, there is no intellectual debate. There never was an intellectual debate. From the first day, there's never been any question but that valuations affect long-term returns, and you don't need an IQ of 140 to figure out that if valuations affect long-term returns, there ain't no way on God's green earth that buy and hold could ever work for the long-term investor. So we're in a pickle. And it's sort of, at some point it becomes foolish to continue to pretend that this is an economic matter. This is a political matter. And I have hesitated for a long time to go to political blogs because I don't like... I used to be actively involved in politics. I was a lobbyist. I was a journalist. I was a journalist for many years. I was a lobbyist for 1 or 2 years. I was a journalist for many years. Tax legislation I wrote about on a daily basis. I covered Congress for many years. And I got sort of turned off because it all turned into this kabuki theater where they go through these games. And they're not really... they make good speeches, but they don't mean what they're saying. So it sort of got tiresome. And I felt I'll go to the personal finance field where I can, help people. And, do some meaningful work. So I'm, first of all, sort of turned off of politics. And then second of all, I've seen politics do damage to many discussion board communities. And I love my community, both of them, the Retire Early community, the indexing community. And I don't like to see people torn apart. I want to see people pulled together by the quest for financial freedom. I don't want to see people torn apart by political differences. So I've been very careful to never post about politics throughout my entire posting career, and I've put up hundreds of thousands of posts at various places. I avoid politics. So I've been very reluctant. But things have reached a point where there's no other way to go. It's the only way we're going to break the logjam. We're going to have political pressure imposed on Morningstar and Motley Fool and Early Retirement Forum and IndexUniverse.com and John Bogle, Vanguard, Fidelity. We need to have political pressure imposed that these people open up the internet to honest posting. And once we do that, I think it's all smooth sailing. We've done some amazing work. And you can check around the site, check the calculators. There are four great calculators, unique calculators. Almost 200 podcasts on different aspects of investing. Incredible stuff that we've come up with. Because early on, five, 6 years ago, I came to the conclusion that the experts really don't know what they're talking about. And I don't say that to be harsh. They believed in buy and hold at one time. It failed them. They didn't want to accept it. Cognitive dissonance set in. And ever since then, they've just been spinning their wheels, talking gibberish. All of the mental energy of these very smart people, and many of them really are smart people, and they're heroes of mine. John Bogle's a hero of mine, certainly. I couldn't have done any of the work I've done without the foundation laid by John Bogle. But he's on the wrong track today. I think that's fair to say. So what happened is they've done all this great work, which gets us halfway to where we need to be. And all you have to do is do a little research on the internet, find out about the valuations question from the people who aren't allowed to post, except at these bear boards, so-called. And, you can put together some wonderful, wonderful stuff. I can't go through it all. It would take too much time. But the short version is I recommend a strategy called valuation-informed indexing. It's just Bogle's approach to indexing with one change. You adjust your allocation when prices change. And that one change would allow the typical middle-class investor to retire 5 years sooner. You can invest in stocks, get far higher returns than people are getting following buy and hold with far less risk, dramatically less risk. So it's a very big deal. It's a very big deal. Valuations is probably two-thirds of investing, of the investing project, is what you need to know is valuations and how they affect long-term returns. And that element of the puzzle has been excluded from consideration now for 30 years because the stock selling industry can't acknowledge that they made this mistake. They can't. So we have to have some outside party, putting pressure, and by pressure, I don't mean threats. By pressure, I just mean reporting the realities. That's how you apply pressure. You just say, here's what the data says, and they freak out. But the point is, at some point, they've got to stop freaking out, and they need to just calm down and say, okay, this model has failed. What works? And I can tell them the answers. I mean, I've done research, but they shouldn't take my word for it. They should be asking all kinds of people what works. But it won't be hard for them to find out because I'm just some guy who posts on the internet and I've been able to figure it out. I just did my own research and figured it out. I'll recommend you go to a couple articles at the valuation-informed indexing section of the site. And you can look at the tabs at the left side. Look for value-informed indexing. There's an article called The True Cause of the Current Financial Crisis. That'll tell you what you need to know. There's an article called Buy and Hold Investing Doesn't Work. These links prove it. That's a great overview. 20 links to articles where people show clearly that buy and hold is gibberish. And then there's an article called Buy and Hold is Dead. These studies prove it. And that links to 20 different studies showing that valuations affect long-term returns and that therefore buy and hold can never work. Now I'm going to read a couple of the quotes from the article entitled Buy and Hold Investing Doesn't Work. These links prove it. Just to give you the flavor of what we're talking about here. That it's not just Rob Bennett that says buy and hold is nonsense. Here's a quote from Rob Arnott. He was the editor of the most prestigious journal in the field, the Financial Analyst Journal. Here's his quote. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. Do you like knowing? that your entire retirement portfolio is riding on something that is myth and urban legend? Here's a quote. This was from the Wall Street Journal. Stocks do not follow a random walk. This finding is confirmed by 30 years of research. Nice to know, isn't it? Nice to know after the stock crash, isn't it? Here's a quote from a political calculations blog. Well, I think he was quoting somebody else. If empirical observation is incompatible with the model must be trashed or amended, even if it is conceptually beautiful or mathematically convenient. You see, the buy and hold model is conceptually beautiful, but just happens to be wrong. The entire historical record shows that it's wrong. I think this next one is from Financial Times. I'm not clicking the links, so I can't tell you where they're from. But if I click the links, I could tell you, but I don't have the time. Economics is a dog's breakfast of theoretical ideas and alleged causal relationships that are at all times unproven and in dispute. It can go on and on. Jeremy Grantham, great guy in the investing field, straight shooter. Greed and reckless overconfidence on the part of almost everyone caused us to ignore risk to a degree that is probably unparalleled in breadth and depth in American history. Even more remarkable was the lack of insight and basic competence of our leadership, which led them to ignore this development, or worse, to encourage it. And he goes on and on. He talks at one point, never underestimate the power of a dominant academic idea to choke off competing ideas, and never underestimate the unwillingness of academics to change their views in the face of evidence. They have decades of their research and their academic standing to defend. The incredibly inaccurate efficient market theory was believed in totality by many of our financial leaders and believed in part by almost all. I could go on and on, but that's not the point of this podcast. The point of this podcast is we're standing at a crossroads, and we can go two ways. We can stick with buy and hold, and if the historical data tells us anything, it tells us if we stick with buy and hold, this entire economy is going over a cliff. What the historical data says is we are likely to see another stock crash of a two-thirds drop in stock prices in the next few years. That's going to send the middle class over the cliff, which is going to shake our political system to its core. The losses suffered in the stock crash have caused middle class workers to be frightened for their financial futures. And we've seen this play out in the healthcare debate. And it's going to get worse. So the question is what to do. On the other hand, if we allowed honest posting, which, you know, is totally in tune with our entire governmental system, free speech is the First Amendment to the Constitution. If we allowed honest posting, we would not eliminate buy and hold. Believe me, there are people who believe this with a feverish intensity. They're not going to drop it. But every place I have ever posted, I have had supporters. If we allowed people to hear the realities, they would start to shift. We would go from 10% knowing the realities of investing. In 6 months, it would be 20%. And in another 6 months, it would be 40%. And in another year, it would be 80%. Buy and hold would be buried 20 feet in the ground where it could never hurt anyone again. I have spoken to financial planners who have indicated to me they would like this to happen. Michael Kitsis is the one that comes to mind, but there are actually a number of them. Another one is Bill Schulthess, the author of The New Coffeehouse Portfolio. He came to my website and he said, Rob, this is so amazing. He's holy Toledo. This is the greatest website. Then he found out about Mel Lindauer's smear campaign and he said, oh, Rob, I can't talk to you anymore. Same thing, Mike Piper, you know, Oblivious Investor blog. He said, Rob, you know, I know you're sincere, you're smart, you're a nice guy, but, you know, I've got, and it's true, he says, I've got readers telling me that their stomachs hurt, their tummies hurt. When you're not being fair, Rob. You're telling them what the historical data says, Rob. I've been telling them buy and hold. How are they going to follow buy and hold if you tell them what the historical data says, Rob? It's hurting their feelings. It does hurt their feelings. It's better to have their feelings hurt by some guy who posts on the internet than to have their feelings hurt by looking at the, you know, another 70% loss in their stock portfolio. Same thing, Carl Richards. He says, Rob, love your blog. Evaluation informed indexing is a huge, huge advance, you know, great benefit, but, you know, I can't allow you to post on my blog because, you upset people. Well, it wouldn't upset people if people had known all along that this was gibberish. The reason it upsets people is we've been telling people that it's true. We've been telling people it could work. That's what upsets people. It's not hearing the truth that upsets people. It's the fact that we've told them that buy and hold makes sense. We've put these crazy ideas in their head. That's what upsets people. So that's what needs to change. Now, so we're not going to get change within the industry because the stock selling industry has made hundreds of millions of dollars promoting buy and hold. And they obviously look bad and they feel shame. And I think, and I really do believe that the vast majority, if not all of them, they are suffering cognitive dissonance and they can't even accept to themselves that they've done this. They can't accept it. So it's going to the change is going to have to come from outside investor world. It's going to have to come from outside the stock selling industry. It's going to have to come from outside even the personal finance blogosphere because most of these blogs, they promote buy and hold. And even the ones that don't, they're afraid to take on the ones that do because blogs depend on links. And if you point out that buy and hold is gibberish, people are going to be mad at you. No way of getting around it. So we've got to go to the political blogs. Now, as I say, I don't like the idea because I don't want to have a political stance. But one thing that gives me some hope is something we've seen with the healthcare debate. And I'm writing this. This is the day when Senator Nelson said he's going to vote for cloture. So they're hoping to get Obama's healthcare plan through the Senate shortly before Christmas is their aim. But there've been a lot of, when they dropped, there was this Medicare expansion provision. First there was single payer, and then there was this Medicare expansion. And when they dropped that, when Lieberman said he wouldn't vote for it, there were a lot of blogs on the left that turned against this bill. And I would call them, some people would call them far left. I would call them populist. Howard Dean Group, Ralph Nader Group, the Daily Kos, is that how you pronounce it? That big blog. There's a blog I read this morning, FireDogLake.com. I think a woman's name there is Jane, I believe. I don't know her last name. But these are some people would call them far left. I would call them populist left. They're clearly to the left, but I would call them, they have a populist orientation. And It's people think this is strange, but it's not really all that strange. They're aligned in a way with populist right, people on the populist right, that have been critical of the bill all along. And because what's happening with the bill is essentially big government is aligning itself with big corporations. That's really what's going on. So the big insurance companies, the big pharmaceutical companies are making out like bandits. The Washington power centers are making out like bandits, and it's the middle class, worker that's paying the bill. And that's just what happens with investing. What you've got is the stock selling industry makes out like bandits when buy and hold is promoted. And the personal finance blogs make out like bandits because they get all these links and it's a plausible story. If you don't investigate it, it sounds plausible. But who gets killed? The investor. And then when the whole thing fails, they blame they blame somebody else. Oh, the bankers did it. Instead of pointing out that the problem was buy and hold all along. Problem was this get rich quick approach to investing. So there's a populist element here. Now, I guess my thought is I did one earlier podcast talking about my own political thinking. That was called Sarah Palin, She Is Me. And I'm a big Sarah Palin supporter. And I support her because she's populist. She's populist, but from the conservative, from the right. So I have been thinking of communicating, telling this story to the blogs, the Tea Party blogs. There are a lot of Tea Party blogs. And trying to get the Tea Party group interested in this problem. A lot of people don't realize how big the problem is. Buy and hold led to an overvaluation of stocks at the top of the bubble of $12 trillion. So that's $12 trillion that disappeared from the economy. When you take $12 trillion out of an economy, and that economy is going to crash. There's just no way around it. And the problem we have today is we've survived earlier crashes, but today the stock market is a bigger presence than it's ever been before because we've essentially, it used to be employers provided for our retirements, and we've given that responsibility over to the middle-class worker. So we're telling middle-class people you've got to provide for your own retirement, but then we're giving them investing advice that is 100% the opposite of what works, and then we've banned discussion of what does work. You can't even believe this stuff. I mean, if I hadn't lived it, I don't think I'd believe it. That's where we stand today. So the situation we're in is a situation where I don't think our economy can continue to function. There's just, and I ask myself, what is the connection between this, you know, what we see, say, with the healthcare debate, where populism is an undercurrent, and the deficit. You know, that was the issue with Ross Perot. That was a populist movement. And, you know, and the buy and hold problem. I can't put my finger on it, but I think part of it is just that we are a richer nation. We've become richer over the years. And a richer nation, things that worked at earlier times don't work anymore. And so, say at earlier times, if the stock selling industry promoted get-rich-quick schemes, the only people that got hurt were rich people because those were the only people invested in stocks. Now, the economy suffered, so in that sense, we all suffered. But middle-class people didn't bear the brunt of it. But now, middle-class people are heavily invested in stocks, and so they're being destroyed. And I just don't think the economy can continue because when middle-class people get scared about their financial futures, they don't spend, and when they don't spend, the whole consumer economy collapses. So things that were viable in an earlier time are no longer viable. And the same thing's true, I think, with our whole political setup. You know, I don't know what the answers are on the political side, but there's no question in my mind, and there's no question in the minds of a lot of other people, that there's a problem today. That the political class, it's not that they're not smart people or they're not good people, but they're acting in their interest. They're acting in the interest of the political class rather than in the interest of, you know, voters, the people. This is what happens over and over again. And you know, so we're not solving the problems. I think the whole problem Obama's had, President Obama, is that he came in, people wanted him to deal with the economy. That was issue number one. And he turned to this healthcare issue, which was not issue number one. It might have been successful in a different environment. But in the environment in which he brought it up, people didn't want to hear it. Now, I want to talk a little bit about my politics just because that's going to be an issue that people are going to have. What made me happy this morning is that I saw these you know, leftists, whatever you want to call them. I don't like these words, left and right, you know. So I think it's two forms of populism, though. I saw these people on the left making populist arguments. And I said, well, maybe one way to solve my problem, I don't want to alienate liberals, because there are wonderful liberals who have helped us. Paul Krugman at the New York Times, he has a column, Conscience of a Liberal. And he wrote a fantastic article in the New York Times Magazine explaining why buy and hold doesn't work, explaining why the efficient market theory is nonsense, giving the history of it. Robert Shiller, the Yale professor, he wrote Irrational Exuberance. He's the godfather of valuations. He's liberal. So, you know, we don't want to alienate our liberal friends. We need their help, and we're grateful for all their help. But I do want to break through this logjam, and I haven't had luck with, you know, Morningstar or Motley Fool. I've offered to help. I've offered all kinds of things. So we need help. And, you know, as I say, I'm sort of in tune with the Tea Party movement, the whole Ross Perot and Sarah Palin sort of phenomenon. But I don't want to be communicating only with Tea Party blogs and then have people, you know, liberals feel that they're not welcome at the site. I don't want people to feel that way. So it may be that the answer is to communicate with the Tea Party group, the Tea Party blogs, the Sarah Palin blogs, and then also communicate with these left populist blogs who may have sympathy for this. The issue, and that way we're not alienating either side. You know, we're sort of playing it down the middle, and I feel much more comfortable with that. Is it a right issue or a left issue? The issue of honest posting on stock investing. It's neither one. The truth is, and I'm always amazed by this, I cite this fact all the time, every single person alive today benefits if more people learn how to invest effectively. There's not one person that gets hurt. Not one. It's just a win-win-win. Even the stock selling industry. I often point out that the reason why the advice we get is so backwards is that it benefits the stock selling. You see, every industry would like you to buy their product at all times. You know, just think if it was the car selling industry and they came up with some book called Cars for the Long Run and it said, don't ever ask the price. When you win to buy a car, just, you know, if they say $30,000, we'll pay $30,000. But if they say $90,000, pay $90,000. And if they say, you know, $1.5 million, pay $1.5 million. Cars are always a good buy. It doesn't matter what price you pay. They're always a good buy. Don't ask the price. Oh, no, 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 no. You'll get yourself in trouble. You might not buy a car if you ask the price and he says $1.5 million, but you always want to buy a car. So don't ask the price. You know, you would think that person was insane, but that's what they do. When you ask for advice on stocks, I remember a guy writing into Scott Burns and saying, you know, I'm invested in index funds. It sounds good, but I don't know. Stocks are really, really high priced, and I'm getting nervous about my retirement. You know, do you think I should lower my allocation? And Scott, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, that would not be buy and hold. Oh, no, hold those stocks. And then we have a stock crash, and the guy loses 55% of his life savings. You know, this is the way it's done. Well, the stock selling industry makes money if people buy stocks all the time, okay? It's the basic fact of life. So they're compromised. They might want to tell the truth. They might want to help you out. But there's huge financial incentives. What would you do if somebody offered you $1 million to promote something that everybody loves to hear? We all love get-rich-quick schemes. But they said they're going to boot you out the door if you report accurately what the historical data says. What would you do? Might be nice to think you'd stand up to it, but how many of us would? How many of us would? So the stock selling industry has intense pressures, but the way our system is supposed to work is that there should be entities outside the stock selling industry that would sort of keep them to the straight and narrow. But are there really such entities? You know, you look at Money Magazine, look at the advertising. 90% of the advertising in Money Magazine is from the stock selling industry. So they are compromised. The Wall Street Journal's compromised. Scott Burns is compromised. J.D. Roth is compromised at the Get Rich Slowly blog. He wants to have links. He wants to have links from Bogleheads and from Vanguard Diehards and all these things. He wants them, and they're not going to link if he points out that they're wrong. And they've been wrong for 30 years. And they're so far wrong, they've caused millions of failed retirements. In other words, we've got a big mess on our hands. If we switch to the rational model, this is the model I propose to replace the buy and hold model. You need to, you know, if you want to learn about it, you need to read the stuff at the site. I can't go into it here. But the only difference really with the rational model is that it allows for changes in your allocation in response to price changes and provides tools so that you know when to make those changes. Short-term timing doesn't work. We don't at all advocate people jumping in and out of stocks. It's just long-term timing always works, according to the historical record. So what you want to do is when stocks are overpriced, you want to lower your allocation a bit. And we have tools that tell you how much. But when they're as much overpriced as they were from 1996 through 2008, you need to lower them a lot. Because in those years, the value proposition was so poor that the optimal allocation was something about 20%. And most quote-unquote experts were telling you 80%. And so that they were off by a factor of 400%. So that's not good. So, you know, we need to bring it. What we're looking for in the political sphere is not to answer the question, you know, how to invest. That's not the job of a political blog. What we're looking for is help with getting these questions on the table, help with getting the ban on honest posting lifted. If the ban on honest posting is lifted, everything else will follow. Once we're able to post honestly and to share what we know with each other, the problem goes away. You know, some people are going to continue to follow buy and hold, and that's good. That's healthy. You know, that's just diversity. Those people will keep us honest. That's good. But others are going to switch. And the more that switch, you know, the more rational the whole investing process will become, and you know, everything will sort itself out. The key here is, you know, as I said, this is not a conservative issue or a liberal issue. Liberals as a rule, you know, you make generalizations. Liberals would say, oh, liberals would tend to be probably not excited about the stock selling industry and all the money they've made promoting buy and hold. So they would be sympathetic to that argument. Conservatives probably less so, as a rule, generally. But conservatives are going to say, well, buy and hold is a market-based model. Conservatives tend to like market solutions. They're going to say, oh, market-based model. And they're not going to like it that we're criticizing buy and hold. But the reality is, buy and hold is not, it's promoted as a market model. But because of the ban on honest posting, it's not really a market-based model. In a functioning, what makes markets work is access to information. And if you read an introductory textbook on why markets, you know, provide a good service, they provide a good service because they set prices properly, which they can only do if people have access to information. Well, as long as there's a ban on honest posting, the market doesn't function. See, market prices would be self-regulating. If we would tell people how much money they would lose when stocks are overpriced, people would obviously lower their stock allocations at times of insane prices. And that would bring prices back down to fair value levels. So you'd have no problem. The market is self-regulating. But it's not self-regulating today because no one has access to this information because it's banned. You can't find out about it. So this is not the current situation. The buy and hold is not a market-based model. It's promoted as a market-based model. So if you explain to conservatives, this is a joke of a market-based model. It's an insult to markets. It's an anti-market model, then you could have support of conservatives. And if you can explain to liberals that just this one change, being open to not following a buy-and-hold strategy, allows the typical middle-class person to retire 5 years sooner, I think you get a lot of support among liberals who are concerned about people having enough money to send their kids to school and have health care and all these sorts of things. So we've got a winner, both among liberals and conservatives. So I want to pull everybody together. My goal here is not to have a fight. Carl Richards said, oh, you're trying to start a fight. I said, no, Carl, I'm trying to avoid a fight. I don't want to start a fight. We have to have a little bit of a fight to get honest posting. You see, until you get to that point, yes, there's all this ugliness. Because of the shame, people feel shame that they've gotten this stuff wrong, and they're defensive because they know, you know, all the people who are suffering cognitive dissonance, they know on some level of understanding that valuations affect long-term returns. So they're very uneasy when you bring these questions up. They don't like the idea of fixing their books. They don't like the idea of fixing their calculators. They don't like that stuff at all. They don't like saying the three magic words, I was wrong. They don't like that. So there has to be a little bit of a fight. But once you get to where the ban on honest posting is lifted, then there's no more fights. Then it's everybody working together. You know, John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Rob Bennett, Robert Shiller, you know, Paul Krugman, everybody. All working for the same thing, to learn how to invest more effectively, to get us out of this economic crisis, to restore middle-class confidence in the markets. And therefore, frankly, to restore confidence in our political system, because people feel that their leaders have let them down, and they're right. Their leaders have let them down. I don't think President Obama knows about this issue, but he should. He's got advisors. He met with Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller certainly could have told him. If he had asked, I'm sure he would have. I don't think George Bush knew about this issue, but he should have. I don't think Bill Clinton knew about this issue, but he should have. Alan Greenspan is one person who has admitted that he was wrong, admitted that he made mistakes. That's what we need more of. And if you want to hear about the full agenda, listen to that earlier podcast, 193. I go through it in some depth. But that's where things stand. What I'm going to try to do over the course of the next year, the course of 2010, is contact political blogs. I'm not going to do, my inclination is to do one or two a week. I don't know. Just sort of start slowly and see how it goes and answer people's questions and all that sort of thing. But explain to people, this is the real cause of the financial crisis. It's not this, you know, the bankers. I mean, the bankers didn't cover themselves in glory, but they just made the same mistake everybody else makes. They misevaluated risk. That's the same mistake we all make. It's not just the bankers. And we did it because of this mistaken theory of how stock investing works, and frankly, at a bigger picture level, how economics works. I mean, there's some big issues at stake here. If we open it up to discussion, we're going to have a huge learning experience. I've learned a lot, and the record of what I've learned is recorded at my site in podcasts and blog entries and articles and calculators. But, you know, no one should take what I say as gospel. I'm just some guy who posts on the internet. What we need are all sorts of smart people getting involved. But we're not going to get those people involved until they feel that they can post without being attacked, without being smeared, you know, without having defamation actions and, you know, all this sort of thing. So all that thing has to be brought to an end. And for that to be brought to an end, we need to have some influential voices rising up saying, Morningstar, open up your boards to honest posting, please. Motley Fool, open up your boards to honest posting, please. Oblivious Investor, lift the ban on honest posting, please, at your blog. You know, Four Pillars blog, lift the ban on honest posting at your blog, please. Carl Richards, lift the ban on honest posting at the Behavior Gap blog. IndexUniverse.com, lift the ban on honest posting. Early Retirement Forum, lift the ban on honest posting. Get Rich Slowly blog, please start running some guest blog entries on these important questions so that we overcome this economic crisis. Bogleheads.org, lift the ban on honest posting. Stop all the nonsense. Please do that today, by the close of business today, if you can. That's what the political blogosphere can add here. It can help us because the investo world is financially compromised. The incentives here are to continue the cover-up. The cover-up hurts everybody. It hurts the stock-selling industry. It hurts the personal finance blogosphere. It hurts the entire U.S. economic and political system. It hurts liberals. It hurts conservatives. It hurts everybody. Now, so, you know, that's where things stand. I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to contact some of these people. I just feel it's a responsible thing to do. If people have questions, I hope they'll contact me at the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the site. I'd like to hear feedback, ideas, you know, people who might be interested in hearing about all this. I'd like to hear from them. And, you know, it sounds strange. Let's get out of this economic crisis. Let's put our country back on the right footing again. It sounds so grandiose to say such things, but that's where we are. There's something going wrong in our country today, and it has to do with elites having lost their way, having lost touch with the people that they serve, and the stock selling industry. I don't know about all these political issues. I don't follow them closely enough that I can say things that, you know, others can't say better than I do. But on the investing side, I can tell you it's a bad scene, and we need to work together. We need to work in a positive spirit. I'm a populist, but I'm not a populist who believes in a reckless populism or a nasty populism. But I believe in a, you know, I do believe the middle class is an important part of what makes the United States the country it's been for a long, long time. And we destroy the middle class, we're destroying the United States. So we need to take that seriously. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.